So, first I thank my co-author, John Shanahan, and thank a number of others that I will mention as you'll see their names as I go through this presentation. Why are we talking about canopy reflective sensing? As I've thought about that, there's really two major drivers that have got us looking at this as a tool for making specifically corn nitrogen decisions. The first, and I'm going to use Peter's work that he's done with this online service. It's called Nitrogen Watch. And basically, it's a kind of an accumulative of the rainfall starting in April, early April, and it just weekly he updates that. And you see how much rainfall there has been through that spring of April through the end of June. And as you look at the survey of the different years that we have there in the Midwest, almost every year there is a fairly significant area that has more than the 15 inches. And that 15 inches is kind of the target. It kind of depends on the soil, but you get up there close to the 15 inches, you've really ratcheted up your leaching, runoff, and deep nitrification potential as you kind of push that precipitation total up. And so it's this, that's why he calls it this nitrogen watch, because you got to watch out. If we have that kind of a wet year, guess what? That nitrogen, if it was put out there, it's very likely on its way off the field and not going to be available for the crop. And so this is a wonderful tool to kind of visualize what's happening in a dynamic way. I appreciate Peter for putting this tool together. It's been wonderful. So that's the first, the weather. The second is the spatial variability. And we, as well as others, have done a number of studies documenting this within spatial variability of nitrogen need. And this is a field there in central Missouri. As you see on the west end of the field, we did some nitrogen plots, and it needed up there in the order of 180 pounds of nitrogen per acre. You go onto the east side of the same field, and you can see the color differences in the aerial image. It only needed 40 pounds. Summarized over a whole bunch of Missouri fields, averaged 88 pounds of nitrogen per acre. That's the range between the low end and the upper end within a field over the fields that we had looked at this. And 32% of fields, there was a within-field variation of EONR that varied by 100 pounds or more. That field previous was one of those fields. So a lot of cases out there showing that within-field spatial variability is significant and huge and needs to be dealt with. And so that brings us to this idea of the canopy, crop canopy sensing, and for doing in-season nitrogen management. And kind of in the spirit of Dr. Bundy and his approach, I didn't work with him a lot, but my perception with what I did have with him was he was a very practical man, his approach. And the reason why he was such a great extension person, he was very practical about the way he did things. So from my framework for the rest of my presentation, I've come up with four practical questions that I kind of pitched here that I would like to try to answer relative to using these canopy reflectance sensing. The first question, the practical question, is which sensor to use? Okay, there's a bunch of sensors out there on the market. A number of us in this room have worked with a number of these different sensors. Which one do you use? How do they compare? Well, when it comes to evaluating and comparing the performance of these sensors, I'm going to give my colleague, Dr. Ken Sutiff, some tribute, because I don't think there's anybody who's tried to fit as many sensors on one vehicle at the same time and compare them in ways that he's done this. And he's really done a nice job so that on the same corn and everything, we can see exactly how these sensors compare. So a whole bunch of sensors on the same. And some of them are the nadir view, looking directly down on the crop row, and some of them, like the TopCon, or crop spec, that's an oblique angled view of the canopy. But we've realigned the data and everything so that we're actually comparing the same sensed area as much as you can with these different sensors to do this comparison. And what he has found, here's a couple of examples with the Crop Circle 210, which is the early version of the Crop Circle, compared with the Green Sequel. They're really tightly related. Here is one where you're comparing the Crop Circle 210 with the Crop Spec, and you can see there's more scatter there as well as you might expect, because this is the oblique angled view onto that crop, and so you're looking at more of just because of that oblique view, you're not looking so much at the soil. It's cutting that out, and so you're going to have some differences when you do that comparison. So you do all the comparison of all those different sensor readings over the same corn, and what you find out is the sensors that have come out of Crop Circle, Holland Scientific, which is really now the optics that 430 is, very, very similar in their output. Same with the Crop Circle and the Green Seeker, there's very similar output. When you start comparing with the Crop Spec sensor and those other oblique viewing sensors, there's more variation, but I think the take home for us has been they're really kind of telling us the same thing. They're telling us when this crop is starting to have some nitrogen stress, and we can then take that information and use that as a part of figuring out what we ought to do. If you look at those sensor readings and compare that to the sensor that's been around for a long time, many of us have used, and that's the SPAD chlorophyll meter, there's a really strong relationship between the sensors and the reflectance sensors and the SPAD readings. It actually is a little stronger as you look at the crop spec SPAD reading relationship. You can see the R-square is a little higher there, and that, again, might be expected, again, because you're not looking at any soil because you have an oblique view onto that canopy. So which sensor to use, I think you can probably make this work for any of those sensors. But there's a caveat to that, and I'll explain that a little bit more. And that's the point that I just made. Practical question number two, what about the soil? Well, first off, there's one issue that I'm not sure is addressed very well, and that is the soil color. And so we did a test here, again, attribute this to Dr. Ken Sutter, where we actually took and we sprayed the soil, with it first being dry and then wetting up some of the rows and not other rows, and looking at just how the soil color changed the reflectance measurements. And when you do that, what you find is that, as you might expect, as you wet up that soil, make it darker, it actually has very different reflectance characteristics. And so in this case, the NDVI variations that we had would actually result in a change of a pretty significant change in the recommended nitrogen rate. So the implications of this are when you have fields that have variation in soil color, whether that be because of free calcium carbonate in some of the soil, surface soil in one part of the field and not in other parts of the field, or if you have soil organic matter variation that creates a different color on that surface, you will have different reflectance characteristics, more so if you're doing this in the V stage of V7 to V9-ish. But once you get canopy closure, obviously you're not getting quite as much effect on the soil. But it's an issue that probably hasn't been addressed, I don't think, very well yet when you have that within field variation of soil color. Evidence of soil-specific algorithms. The soil does make a difference. And so there's some work that Darren Roberts did as part of his PhD work, working with Richard Ferguson and others there at Lincoln, Nebraska, where they were looking at the sufficiency index from the sensor readings in different zones within fields. In some fields it didn't matter, but in other fields it did matter quite a bit. So there's evidence there that there should be soil-driven information as a part of how you would use these sensors to drive your nitrogen fertilizer recommendations. And then more recently, Dave Franson in North Dakota, so we're scaling up to a state scale here, he's done some development of some algorithms where he found very different response with the high clay soils of eastern North Dakota as compared to the medium textured soils. So he has algorithms that are specific to that. I think that paper has just recently been submitted for publication, should be coming out soon. So again, emphasis that there needs to be sensitivity to the soils. Maybe another point on that is the work that Nicholas Tremblay did in summarizing some response plots, nitrogen response plots, started up in his area in Quebec all the way down into Mexico, 52 site years, and bingo, there is a very stark contrast between fine-textured soils and medium-textured soils in terms of the relative response to nitrogen inputs. And so the whole idea that soil needs to be a part of this is apparent, and it needs to be addressed, perhaps even at the within field scale, but certainly at the regional and at the regional scale. Practical question number three: what algorithm to use? Okay, there's a whole bunch of algorithms. Everybody has algorithms that you've seen about, and they're not the same. So which one do you use? Well, it shouldn't surprise us if we look at the table of all these different sensors and see the different wavelengths that are being used and how the target is being addressed, whether it's oblique or whether it's at a nadir view, that there's going to be some information that comes out of that reflectance measurement that is kind of specific to that sensor. And so oftentimes the algorithm that's developed is kind of sensor specific. And maybe some of that issue is taken out if you're looking at that relative to an enrich. You're indexing your reading to an enrich, and so that you're normalizing it to that. At the same time, there's still some sensor-specific information there. And so I'm not sure, short of doing something like what we've done in Missouri, where you look at a relationship between several sensors and there's going to be a slope and an offset consideration. And that's kind of really what we did for some of the recommendations that we've put out there. They are sensor-specific recommendations because of the nature and the engineering, the architect of these sensors. We also have a growth stage kind of a variable in our recommendations, and then you can see that the actual algorithm there, they're specific under those different conditions. So which algorithm to use? I think you need to understand how the algorithm was developed, how flexible it is, and as time goes on, I think there's going to be an additional inputs to kind of tweak these algorithms. One of the ones that's come out here a few years ago, Jim Shepherds and Kyle Holland, is a part of one that they published on. It's obvious when you get in a field and here's the sensor readings over a portion of the field where the corn stand was either very poor, it was completely gone because it was standing water at some point. And so their recommendation is there needed to be a back off in your function. And when you get down there at about 0.7 with your sufficiency index using the reflectance sensors, you better be cutting it off. It doesn't need more nitrogen. It needs stand. And you can't do anything about that at this point. So you better just be cutting off your nitrogen. Otherwise, you're going to be wasting that out there in the field. Last final question, practical question number four, will it work? There's a number of experiences that some of you have had out there that suggest that maybe it doesn't work all that well. But in Missouri, we've had several different data sets that we've collected. One was work that we did on some producer fields with smaller plots. And when you took the summary of all those fields together and you looked at the sufficiency index with the canopy reflexing and looked at reflectance, and you look at that relative to the maximum economic yield and the nitrogen rate to reach that, there is an increase in N that is needed as you have a smaller sufficiency index. The family of different curves you see here with the different colors represent different fertilizer to grain ratio, the prices for the fertilizer versus the price that you're going to get at the elevator for the grain. So up here is where fertilizer is really cheap relative to grain. This is where it's really expensive. So we wanted to show as a part of this analysis that, you know, economics can have a big part of this also. This line here represents actually the algorithm that I remember sitting with him there in the field before we even started our first study. You remember that, Peter? I mean, we were trying to figure out what to do with this algorithm. We wanted to test this algorithm. So this is kind of the algorithm that we come up with based upon some of the work that he and John had done earlier, John Laurie. And it really fits that relationship pretty nicely. So we got confidence, hey, you know, this can work. And then Peter later did side-by-side trials there in Missouri. I think there was about 50 trials. We worked with him on some of this too. Here he's looking at the nitrogen rate that was based on the sensor compared to what the producer would have had done on his field. So these are side-by-side strip trials. And then he looked at the profit, whether or not there was a profit or losses associated with using that sensor compared to whether the producer would have just done it the way he'd always been doing it. And there's quite a bit of scatter there, but still the general trend is there's going to be some profit. that you'll get off of that. And so, again, some feedback to help us to realize it worked. My final slide for in terms of this final question of does it work is I'm an individual that I really enjoy talking to. This is a farmer, young farmer near Hannibal, Missouri, Mark Lindenbauer. He started doing side dressing on all his corn in Missouri when very few were in 2001. Very good student of the crop and of the soils, and then he went to a late season side dress in 2005, started using the sensors in 2006, and switched to this Hege system where he's injecting it in 2008. So he's got about 8 years of experience now using this, and this is what he tells me. He says, it's not a fix-all solution. You got to use common sense. It's better than guessing. On his clay pan soils, it seems to work better than his river bottom soils. He has a hog operation too, and the field that he puts his manure out there on the fields, it's great on those particular fields. And the economics, some years he's losing money using the sensors, particularly on the dry years, because that nitrogen does get out there late and it doesn't really get activated. 25% of the time he gets break even, but on 50% of the time he says he's getting profits, and they're big profits, and he's sticking with it. So when and where will it work best? Early season wet cycles, when there's extreme field variability, spatial variability, when previous management creates uncertainties, whether that's manure, cover crop, legumes, following pasture hay or CRP, following drought years, corn on corn, or if there's been some situation where the field's receiving uneven and that fertilization because of equipment failure. I think those are all great scenarios for where these sensors are going to work and really pay back. There's a lot of tools out there now. We're seeing there's models, there's empirical-based models, there's sensing, there's the old soil test. There's a lot of great in-season tools that are there. They're kind of being tested and used and their performance. My sense is as time goes on, there's probably going to be these tools are going to help inform each other. For example, maybe the crop growth models end up helping to inform where you need to go with the proximal canopy sensing. I think that these things are going to tie together in a nice way as we go forward. Thank you.